Blander Wheel, Part 5. Oscar Buckle ran like his life depended on it, because his life did depend on it, because everybody knew you didn't go outside in a blander wheel. So Oscar ran and ran. Never mind that he couldn't see more than a foot in front of him. Never mind that he had no idea where the lighthouse was, or where Sage was, or where he was, or even where the ground was. He ran as the skies darkened. He ran as great bolts of lightning shot across the sky. He ran as the clouds split open and dumped buckets and buckets of rain down over the earth. He ran as the ground beneath him began to shake and tremble with violent quakes and jolts. The lighthouse must be close now, and he knew he had to reach it, or else he'd be swept into the gray sea, carried away by the rising waves that were crashing viciously across a small island. Could an entire island flood? Would the lighthouse and Oscar and this tiny outcrop of land end up at the bottom of the sea? As he continued to run, he thought he heard a voice screaming in the wind. But then he realized it was him. It was his voice. He was screaming. And even as he realized that, a wild wail of wind stole his voice away. Suddenly, he could hear nothing except the white noise of the storm. And then everything went black. His ears roared with sound. Was he dead? No. You probably couldn't hear things if he were dead. And he could feel things, too. His cheek and chest and hips were pressed against something hard. The ground. He had fallen to the ground. Ouch. The wind was violent, whipping his hair around his face. He struggled to open his eyes, to push himself up. He needed to find Sage. He needed to keep going. If he stayed out here in the storm for much longer, well, then he really might die. He managed to get to his hands and knees, but the wind was too strong for him to stand up. It pressed him down like a physical thing, like 100 strong hands were pushing against his back. The closest thing to a blander wheel in our world is a monsoon. The last blander wheel to hit Rhone had been 3 years ago. The storm had lasted for 23 terrifying minutes. Oscar had been inside, of course. Dove had lost power. He and Bilius had lit candles and put them up in their windows, in their window savers, and sat together on the floor of the living room, listening to the roar of the storm outside. Dove had swayed in the violent winds, which had been scary. The buildings in Rhone were designed to sway in heavy winds. Otherwise, they might just snap in half. Oscar's heart had beat so fast he could feel it pulsing in his fingertips. And still, the next day, after Bilius had replaced one of Mrs. Carmichael's shattered windows, despite her window saver, he'd said, "That wasn't the worst blander wheel I'd ever seen." What would Bilius say about this blander wheel? Oscar wondered, as he struggled and failed to pull himself to his feet. Was this the worst blander wheel Bilius had ever seen? And where was Bilius now? Was he safe? What if he noticed Oscar was gone? What if he had gone to look for him? Had Oscar put Bilius in danger? Oscar could feel himself starting to panic. His strength had been depleted. He collapsed, pressing his cheek into the ground, breathing hard into the dirt. The backpack had fallen somewhere next to him. He couldn't see it in the darkness. Why had he gone back for it? Why hadn't he changed his batteries in the flashlight? Why hadn't he told Bilius or Nico or Petra or anybody else about the weather machine? Why did he think he and Sage would be able to stop the biggest company in the entire city? Oscar thought he might have been crying, but there was so much rain on his face, he couldn't be sure. He lay on the ground for a long time as the rain continued to beat down, turning the dirt to mud and flooding the small island, first an inch, then two, then three. The blander wheel was showing no signs of slowing down. He hoped Sage had made it to the lighthouse okay. If she hadn't, he would never forgive himself. This was all his fault. Why had he listened to a random Farsouthian in a random part of the night market that didn't even exist? Maybe he'd hit his head so hard he'd imagined the whole thing. Maybe Eunice was a figment of his brain-rattled imagination. Oscar squeezed his eyes shut. He couldn't keep lying here and spiraling and feeling bad for himself forever. He had to move or he would never be able to. He'd be stuck there in the mud and dirty rainwater forever. He didn't know where he found the strength, but he did. Little by little, inch by inch, he made it onto his hands and knees again. He had to find that backpack. Crawling, Oscar made a series of circles, larger and larger, hoping he was covering enough ground. He felt with his hands in the darkness. And then a huge bolt of lightning shot across the sky, and he saw it, the backpack. He lunged for it, his fingers closing around one of the straps. He slipped it onto his back. He had to get up, now. Still on his knees, he straightened his torso. He got one foot on the ground, then the other. Then he straightened his legs bit by bit, until he had somehow managed to stand. The storm was all around him. It consumed everything. It was everything. It filled his ears and his eyes, and it pressed against every inch of his skin. The wind was incredible. Oscar had felt a lot of wind in his lifetime, and this was unlike anything he'd ever experienced. It smashed against him from every angle, first crashing into his right side, then pummeling his left side, then knocking into his stomach so hard it took his breath away, then pounding his back so strongly he almost folded over. He forced himself to take a step. Water sloshed around his ankles, and with each step he took, he swore he could feel it rising. Gray Island was flooding. He wanted to run. He tried to run, but the wind was just too strong. Every few seconds, the earth was rattled by a tremendous boom of thunder. The lightning split the sky apart, making everything suddenly so bright that it was hard to focus on anything, hard to get his bearings. But then, there it was. The lightning flashed low across the sky to his left, and the dark outline of the lighthouse popped into view. Oscar course corrected and trudged onward, step by brutal step. He developed a sort of mantra as he went. This meant, he repeated with every single step, I have to find Sage, I have to find Sage, I have to find Sage. He forced himself to keep his eyes open, to wait for every flash of lightning, to make sure he was still headed in the right direction. It was nothing short of a miracle when several grueling minutes later, completely soaked to the bone and shivering uncontrollably, Oscar crashed into something hard and chair-shaped. It took him a moment to realize what it was. And then, Dot. Sage, he screamed. Oscar, she screamed back. I thought you were dead. I thought I was dead too. Are we close? This way, it's right here. Oscar felt Dot move, and he followed as closely as he could, knocking his shins against the wheelchair, squeezing Sage's hand so hard he thought he might have ripped it off. And then he saw the door, right in front of them, not even boarded up, just there. Sage reached out a hand and pushed it open, and in another moment they were inside a small vestibule, and Oscar had shut the door behind them, and they were alive. Somehow, they were alive. Oscar dropped to his knees. His whole body was shaking, and he couldn't seem to catch his breath. It was pitch black. Outside, the wind howled and the rain fell and the thunder boomed and the walls of the lighthouse shook around them. How sturdy do you think this thing is? Sage asked. Her voice was small and quivering. Oscar couldn't answer her. He couldn't breathe. I didn't think I was going to make it, he said finally, once he'd found his voice again. I know, she said. I just kept thinking that it would have been my fault if anything had happened to you. And then I started thinking about my dad. What if he went looking for me and your parents? What if they went looking for you? What if somebody got hurt? All of this is just a mess and it's all my fault. Oscar, I found the same stuff in my dad's study that you did. It was my decision to come here and we're okay. We're going to be okay. No matter what we find here, we can wait out the storm. We're safe now. But the lighthouse groaned around them, and the floor vibrated, and Oscar couldn't help but feel like they weren't safe. Not at all. Why didn't I bring a flashlight? Sage mumbled. That's the one thing I forgot. And then Oscar thought of something. He searched the pockets of his jacket frantically, just now remembering that the last time he'd worn it, he'd been inside Chateau Buckle. They'd lost heat for a night, and Bilius had lit a fire. Afterward, he'd handed Oscar a book of waterproof matches, telling him to keep them safe and on hand. obviously, any matches produced in Rhone were of the waterproof variety. And there, here they were. Oscar's fingers closed around a small book, and he withdrew it from his pocket and ripped off a match and dragged it against the striker. The space was tiny, so the flame lit well. "Hi," Oscar said to Sage, when her wet, scared face came into view. "Hi," Sage said. "That's better." "They only burn for a minute or so," Oscar said. "Then, I think I'm starting to feel a little better."
"You were right behind me, and then you were gone."
"Your backpack. It fell off the wheelchair. I thought we might need it."
"My backpack," Sage repeated, noticing Oscar was wearing it for the first time.
"You know, I slept through the last blander wheel."
"How did you sleep through a blander wheel?"
"My dad asked me the same thing." At the mention of her dad, they both fell silent. The match burned out in Oscar's fingers. He lit another one. Then,
"Wait, what is that?"
He pointed behind Sage to the wall opposite the front door. There was nothing on the wall, not a door or a blemish or a sign. Nothing except one small black box, a keypad. Oscar moved closer to Sage, throwing more light on it. It was a standard numerical keypad, and underneath each number were 3 to 4 letters, just like a telephone.
Said Oscar, "you wouldn't happen to know the code, would you?"
"No," Sage replied. Oscar's heart sunk. They had made it so far. It had never occurred to him that there might be a code to get into the lighthouse. There was nothing they could do now. They didn't know how long the code was. So there was quite literally an infinite number of possibilities. They would never be able to guess it.
"Let's think," Sage said. "If my dad is a chief engineer, and he's the one with the blueprints in his office, then he must have been in charge of all this now. Of the weather machine and stuff."
"Maybe."
"Then he probably chose the code."
"Maybe."
"So it could be something like his birthday."
Sage entered her father's birthday into the keypad. A small red light flashed once.
"Nope," she said, disappointed.
"Your birthday?" Oscar suggested. Just as the match's flames snuffed out, he lit a new match. Sage tried in this order: her birthday, Arthur's birthday, her mother's birthday, and her parents' anniversary.
"Although, I guess it doesn't have to be numerical," she said, after each code had prompted flashes of red light. "There are letters, too."
"Try your names," Oscar said. So Sage tried her name, Arthur's name, her mother's name, and her father's name. Red, 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 red. The third match burnt out, and Oscar lit a fourth.
"How many of those do you have?" Sage asked nervously.
"A few more. Do you have any other ideas?"
"No. You know how private my dad is."
Oscar thought of Mr. Cleverer's office, how bare it had been. Nothing on the walls, very few personal touches. Granted, they haven't lived in that house all that long, and maybe he had plans to spruce it up later, but it was just empty. The only things in the entire room had been the picture of Sage and Archer, Arthur, and a picture of the dog. The dog! The dog! The fourth match's flame burned so low that it singed Oscar's fingers. He yelped and dropped it to the floor where it extinguished.
"That's it," he said into the darkness as he fumbled for a fifth match.
"What's it?"
"Scrappy," Oscar exclaimed.
"Who's Scrappy?"
"Who's Scrappy?"
"Your father's childhood dog."
"The dog from the picture? On his desk? How do you know its name?"
"It was written on the back."
"You're a better snoop than I am," Sage said.
Oscar managed to get a match lit with his shaking fingers. He punched the following numbers into the keypad. 727-2779. The light flashed green. And before either of them could say a word, a section of the wall next to the keypad sunk backward, then glided smoothly to the side.
"Oh my gosh, what is happening?" Sage said.
"I believe that it is a secret doorway," Oscar replied. And they stepped into the gray lighthouse.